AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, collaboration, and creativity. No product can be absolutely secure. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.
President Biden touts NATO's unity as Russia's war in Ukraine approaches the one-year mark.
I think the visit of a U.S. president to a war zone has enormous significance, symbolic significance. And I think this is a message that President Biden wants to send to Vladimir Putin, that you think you can outlast us here, but you're not going to.
And U.S. stocks tumble on concerns about higher interest rates. Plus, having a hard time returning to work after a long break? We've got tips for a smooth transition. It's Tuesday, February 21st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Speaking in Warsaw, Poland today, President Biden sought to rally Western allies hours after Russian President Vladimir Putin vowed to continue the fight in Ukraine.
The United States and the nations of Europe do not seek to control or destroy Russia. The West was not plotting to attack Russia, as Putin said today. And millions of Russian citizens who only want to live in peace with their neighbors are not the enemy. This war was never a necessity. It's a tragedy.
President Biden made an unannounced trip to Kyiv over the weekend, part of a three-day trip to unify allies ahead of the first anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Meanwhile, we report exclusively that Chinese leader Xi Jinping plans to meet with Putin in Moscow in the coming months. People familiar with the plan say it would be part of China's push for multi-party peace talks to end the Russia-Ukraine war. Western capitals have expressed skepticism about the initiative, though some say governments are cautiously interested given Beijing's sway in Moscow. We'll talk more about Biden's trip, Russia's response, and how China fits in later in the show. Weeks after a train derailment and chemical spill in East Palestine, Ohio, the Environmental Protection Agency says it's ordered Norfolk Southern to clean up the site of the accident. EPA Administrator Michael Regan appeared in East Palestine today alongside the governors of Ohio and Pennsylvania. He said he was using his authority under the federal Superfund law to require Norfolk Southern to address the problem. A spokesperson for the company couldn't immediately be reached for comment. The investment advisor overseeing a $32 billion equities portfolio for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has agreed to pay $4 million to settle an investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC alleged that Ensign Peak Advisors obscured the Mormon Church's investment holdings. As part of the settlement, the church will also pay a $1 million fine. The money manager and the church both settled without admitting or denying wrongdoing. In corporate earnings, Walmart reported strong sales last quarter, with December marking its largest sales volume month ever. The company says it's gaining market share in groceries, including among high-income households, as it draws in shoppers looking for discounts amid high inflation. Meanwhile, Home Depot has lowered its forecast for this year. It expects sales to be flat after a surge in consumer spending during the pandemic. The company says shifts in consumer spending and a $1 billion investment in pay increases for workers will weigh on its profit margins. The company has provided flat sales guidance for the last 2 years, but it's still churned out revenue growth as higher prices offset declines in customer visits. An update on the U.S. housing market. Home sales have now fallen for 12 straight months as high mortgage rates push buyers out of the market. The National Association of Realtors says sales of previously owned homes fell 0.7% in January from the prior month and by nearly 37% from a year earlier. U.S. stocks and bond prices fell today on concerns that the Federal Reserve will keep raising interest rates higher for longer. The disappointing earnings report from Home Depot and data showing a weakened housing market also weighed on stocks. The Dow dropped nearly 700 points, or more than 2%. The S&P 500 also lost 2%, and the Nasdaq was down 2.5%. Coming up, what President Biden aimed to achieve with his speeches in Ukraine and Poland nearly 1 year after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
Over the last few days, a flurry of public statements from world leaders and diplomats has highlighted the stakes of Russia's war in Ukraine. In speeches delivered in Kyiv and Warsaw, President Biden touted the NATO alliance's resolve to support and supply Ukraine for the long haul. In a State of the Nation address on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin repeated claims that the West was to blame for the war and said Russia would step back from the last remaining nuclear arms treaty between his country and the U.S. Meanwhile, China's top diplomat sharply criticized the U.S. in a speech to European leaders and American officials before heading to talks in Moscow. Joining me now to talk about how all of these events fit together is Stephen Fidler, our bureau chief at large. Hi, Stephen. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
So, Stephen, President Biden made a surprise visit to Kyiv over the weekend.
1 year later, Kyiv stands, and Ukraine stands, democracy stands. The Americans stand with you, and the world stands with you.
And he followed that with a defiant speech in Warsaw, Poland today to rally support from Western allies. Taken together, what can you tell us about the significance of Biden's trip at this time?
I think the visit of a U.S. president to a war zone has enormous significance, symbolic significance at the moment. And I think it's meant to underline just how the U.S. support for Ukraine, which has been extremely strong in terms of financial support and material support in weapons and that kind of thing, will continue. And I think this is a message that President Biden wants to send to Vladimir Putin, that you think you can outlast us here, but you're not going to. And also to these countries that border Russia or are very close to Russia, that American support is forthcoming for them and won't waver.
Also today, we heard from Russian President Vladimir Putin, who vowed to continue the war in Ukraine. He also suspended the nuclear arms treaty between Russia and the U.S. How is this step being viewed by experts, and what are the geopolitical implications there?
This treaty is one of the last vestiges, if you like, of the arms control architecture of the Cold War. And it's, you know, in a sense, can be said to have kept us safe for decades. It's a regime of the limitation of nuclear weapons and inspections. And, you know, inspections haven't been going on for some time. And I think American officials are seeking to understand exactly what the Russians mean and what Putin means by this suspension. But it is a kind of worrying sign linked to the war in Ukraine, a signal that this great power politics continues to erode. So it's a discomforting message as the rivalry among the great powers intensifies.
Let's talk about China. Last week, the U.S. warned Beijing against supplying Russia with weapons to continue the fight in Ukraine. What role has China played thus far in the war, and what could all of this mean for U.S.-China relations?
Well, as Russia's relations with the West, with the U.S., and with Europe have shrunk, Europe has stopped buying significant amounts of Russian energy, in particular natural gas. There have been sanctions that have restricted exports of things like microchips and this kind of thing. Russia has increasingly been forced to turn towards China, both as a market for its energy and as a conduit, if you like, for some of the things that it can't get from the usual Western sources. So China is important, has been important in supplying a lot of equipment for which has so-called dual use, which are for civilian and military use. And that is as far as it's gone so far. The Chinese haven't supplied, as far as Americans know, hasn't supplied weapons directly to Russia. And of course, Russia has lost huge amounts of weaponry and equipment in Ukraine such that it actually constrained its ability to fight the war. So if the Chinese were to start supplying weapons to Ukraine, that would be a very significant move. It would also signal that the Chinese were in effect decided that it was in their strategic interests not to allow Russia to lose the war in Ukraine. That would be a major, major step, a Chinese-Russian bloc and a heightening of superpower rivalries.
Stephen, the Journal has also been reporting about China's intention to unveil a multi-party peace plan. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the Chinese have said that they are going to unveil a peace proposal for Ukraine. that will include a number of things, including, you know, guaranteeing the sovereignty of countries in the region and addressing security concerns, which seems to be code for dealing with Russia's supposed worries about NATO and the threat from Ukraine. You know, I'm told by some analysts in Germany that there is interest in what Beijing has to say here, that China has huge sway in Moscow now, and that if it really was to commit itself to a peace deal, that would be something that the Russians would have to listen to. But I think people see some significant flaws. I mean, a ceasefire, for example, now in Ukraine would cement the gains that Russia has already made in the country. And it's certainly something that the Ukrainians wouldn't support. And the other thing is, given that the Chinese have so far refused to condemn the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, you know, they're not widely trusted by all countries who would be parties to this. And so, you know, there is the sort of prospect, as somebody told me the other day, of kind of fake Chinese diplomacy here. And, you know, it does seem unlikely that such an agreement would be possible in any time in the next few months, in any case, since Russia hasn't shown any indication that it's interested in it.
Wall Street Journal Bureau Chief at Large, Stephen Fidler. Stephen, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're most welcome.
And finally, each year, many Americans take an extended break from work to care for a loved one or a new baby or for military service or for a sabbatical. And more are doing it all the time. Leave requests were up by at least 21% last year, according to a survey by the HR software company AbsenceSoft. But after you take a leave of absence, coming back to work can be complicated. The same job may feel different. You may even have new coworkers or a new boss. Denise Rousseau studies organizational behavior and employee relationships at Carnegie Mellon University. And she tells our As We Work podcast that the secret to a smooth return is being upfront with your colleagues about what kind of support you need.
Update them on what's happening. Don't assume they know. And don't subject people to the secret test. They're supposed to read your mind. They're supposed to ask, how are you doing? Tell them. And be, without belaboring the point, clear about what you're coming from, where you are, and what you might need, and ask for their ideas.
You can learn more about how to pave the way for an easier return to work on the Wall Street Journal's workplace podcast, As We Work. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.